Hello, you're listening to Crossing the Desert. This podcast is a reality series about how I build my small business in the Emirates. You will hear my calls to friends, the sounds of Dubai streets, and most importantly, the stories of entrepreneurs who opened a business and settled here in the Emirates. I'm Isaac. I came to Dubai to put down my roots here. The stories of entrepreneurs who have already succeeded here will help me on my way. In each episode, I interview people from India, Egypt, Palestine, Caribbean Islands, UK, and other countries. I don't know which ones yet because the story is just the beginning. The podcast is brought to you by Fortis, the omnichannel platform that integrates POS, CRM, orders, payments, and loyalty programs for small and medium-sized businesses. Today, I'm going to one of the most crucial interviews for me. I'll speak with the founders of the Arabic language school. And since I myself am going to build an English language school, I'm going to use this conversation to find out all the business secrets. It was not easy to arrange the interview, because when I first contacted Lydia, the founder of the school, it turned out that she had flown to Moscow for the summer. But of course, I didn't think of giving up, so I also flew to Moscow. And in the end, we met with her in a small recording studio on Arba Street. Hi.
Hello.
Nice to see you. Thank you for doing it with us.
Thank you for inviting me and nice to meet you in person.
Yeah, likewise. Feel comfortable. Yeah, this is just our conversation between two friends almost. But looking ahead, I will say that this conversation gave me much more than I actually expected. A plan, a business model, and even ideas for sales. So meet Lydia, founder of Arabiiti.
Arabiiti is an online platform teaching Arabic for adults and kids, and we've created an innovative method of teaching Arabic as math. Basically, we split Arabic into simple formulas and give these formulas to our students, and they are able to speak about themselves, their families, count to 100 only after 1 hour.
It sounds like a cool pitch, but why did she choose Arabic?
Me personally, I had no choice.
That sounds like a title.
I've studied Arabic in the university in Moscow, and it was compulsory. It was second language. We studied English and Arabic. And then I went to Jordan in 2008 as a part of cultural exchange between universities. And then in 2010, I went to Jordan, studied master's, and got married to, I always say, it's a side effect of my education.
It's cute.
It's a very nice side effect, yes, my husband. So, and I loved Arabic from the very first lesson, but it took me around 6 years to be fluent in Arabic, because we were taught in classical manner. When you are like an Arabist, a translator, we've spent a lot of time on letters and reading and writing, and then deeper and deeper in grammar. And after 3 years, I could talk about politics and oil and stuff, but not about simple things that you will use on a daily basis. So in 2013, I went to Dubai and started teaching Arabic. And first, I used the same method I was taught in the university, and I understood it doesn't work because I'm not preparing translators and Arabists. I want just normal people to learn some Arabic, to use it with friends, family, with partners, investors. And in 2018, I participated in initiative Teach for Russia. It's a part of Teach for World. Basically, this initiative, they recruit teachers and they send them in the rural area in Russia for in small towns and schools, and we teach them something new. So I went to a small town and we had this kind of marathon. We had 3 days to recruit kids to our, let's say, lessons, to promote so that they will come to learn Arabic, in my case. And then we had three days to teach them something. for kids, a different approach totally. And classical approach does not work because they will never learn basically language. You need to give bits of information, useful and fun, so they can use it right away. And I thought I need to change something. I need to be creative. So this is the moment I created first few steps. And I teach kids in 3 days numbers, self-introduction and questions, simple questions like what's your name, where are you from, blah, blah, blah. And in the third day, we had a presentation of what we have done, and local TV company came to record this. And my kids, they were asking each other, answering, showing some words. And the reporter asked, for how many years have you been learning Arabic? And they're like, only 3 days. And everyone was shocked, and I was shocked, because if kids can learn so many things, adults for sure can learn even more. So I started to recreating the approach from that time. And I've created this method using these tools already existing in the language. This mathematical approach already exists. We just need to translate it into foreign mind, basically. And this is what we've done. In the beginning of the lesson, we give the formulas to the student so they will understand the logic behind phrases we give. For example, if I want to say I live in Dubai, in Arabic I will say Ana Aisha fi Dubai. And then I give other nouns, for example, my mom, my dad, my sister, my husband. And then they can change the first word in the sentence using not me, but my mom lives in Dubai. So they will change only one word, but the sentence will be correct. And they understand this logic. And by the end of the lesson, they can construct these sentences by themselves, saying information about themselves and their family. And then I came to Dubai and I started to do the Kasdef. I went to different institutes, online schools, being as a student, watching how they teach. And I understood what problems we have in teaching methods now. And I asked my students and other students what they really want. And everyone said, we want systematic approach, that I understand what I'm doing, not only repeating. And I want something practical that I can use right away. So I've created my method, steps, and then I've tried with students, received the feedback, upgraded it. And then in 2020, I published my book in one of the institutes in Dubai. Basically, I had a request from the institute. They wanted to have their own book for teaching Arabic. And it just suited me well, because I wanted to publish my method, and they asked me to do that. So all the expenses were on the institute's part. We say it's our first MVP. And from that time, we have more than 1,000 students already tried our approach. I felt proud, and also I give training for existing teachers in this institute how to use this method. And I was so afraid that I will teach Arabs how to teach Arabic, and I was thinking, oh my God, they will say it's all not worthy, it's not right, la 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 la. And no, they accepted it very well. They were excited and like, oh, it's so good, what can we do with this and that and da da da. And that gave me such a push that, oh my God, I'm not an imposter anymore. I can teach Arabs basically how to teach Arabic. And this is an issue, because Arabs, they don't believe that Arabic can be taught as any other language. Even, for example, in Dubai, in institutes and especially in schools, teachers do not believe that foreigners can speak Arabic as English or French or whatever. And it gives so many, such a strong frustration for teachers and for students. And in 2020, after I published this book, I decided I want to change it. I want to change this perception from teacher's side and from student's side.
Wow. I mean, just wow. I simply could not believe that teachers at the university, which is, as I'm used to, is a very conservative institution, can be very open to new methods. Moreover, the one that is brought by the non-native woman. And this is not the first time in Arab history. The most famous teacher of Arabic, Sibawayhi, was not a native. Remember, I already told about him in the first episode, how he took his students to the bazaar to learn Arabic in its natural environment. remember? So he came up with his own practical teaching method, and he became famous for it. There is another story about him. Once he debated with the grammarian Al-Ksai at the court of the Abbasid Caliph Harun al-Rashid. The issue at hand was the correct grammatical form of sentence involving a type of verb construction. Sibawayh, he argued, for the grammatically traditional and normative usage, while Al-Ksai, who was more attuned to the colloquial and dialectical variations, presented a different viewpoint. Then, Al-Ksai asked Bedouins, who were considered purer speakers of Arabic, to judge the correctness of the forms. They sided with Al-Ksai, which reportedly devastated Sibawayh, leading him to leave Baghdad in despair. Some accounts suggest that Sibawayh felt so dishonored by the outcome that he never returned to teaching or scholarly work, while others suggest that he continued his studies but with diminished public presence. Ibn Qutaiba, the earliest extant source in his biographical entry under Sibawayh, he only wrote about him that he was mainly a grammarian. He arrived in Baghdad, fell out with the local grammarians, was humiliated, went back to some town in Persia, and died there while still a young man. Okay, maybe he lost this academic debate. He still remains one of the most famous teachers of Arabic. It's his name and not the name of his opponent that schools around the world are now named. And there is a scholarship named after him that supports those who want to learn Arabic. Because if the teaching methodic is simple and works, then it works. But let's go back to Lydia's story. Let me remind you, at this point, she already has a book and a course used at the university with a big success. But turning it into a business is a completely different task, and her husband helped her with this.
So I'm a dreamer, and I have
that's
so
a statement.
So many business ideas all the time. My husband was listening and like, let's do this and that. And on every year of our life, it was a new idea. But the Arabic was mainstream. And in 2020, after I published the book, we see the good feedback. And then we moved to online because of the pandemic. I had so many lessons, I couldn't deal, like too many students. And I started to think that I want to have a school and to give these students to other teachers. My first teacher that I recruited was my husband, Maran. And we had a lot of arguing, like he was saying that my method is not working and it's not good and blah, blah, blah. And I was saying, like, just try. And then he tried my method and he believed in it so much. So
more now than you.
Yeah, now he's a recruiter of teachers. He built the team. And then on the website, we created a tab for teachers, fill in application. And we received a lot of inquiries for being a teacher. And we started the process of recruiting.
This is what it should be the first step for my English school. What I know as a teacher needs to be packaged into a methodology, essentially a recipe that other people can cook with. I need to make sure that by following it, other teachers can achieve the same results as myself. Step two is to hire. To hire, train, and review teachers. And since Lydia's husband, Marwan, is responsible for this part of the business, I asked him about it.
Have you worked out the mechanics of how to hire people? Like, let's say if you need to double your staff tomorrow, what would you do or how will you do it?
So there are two steps here. First is having the leads. And because we are in our point of the world where you have a lot of unemployment, it's quite easy to have a lot of people who have the requirements, yeah? So the part that we engineered and made it very easy is what are the requirements for someone to become a part of our VAT as a teacher? So what we did is we hire them as third-party suppliers so we get out of the legal issues. Plus, we demand only for them to know Arabic and one other language. So we really minimize the requirements. And we start training them. And when we're training them, usually it's 4 to 6 meetings. It includes the evaluation plus the teaching of 3 different aspects. First, it's the tech, because the main challenge online is someone to know how to use the tech. I mean, I know it sounds very intuitive now, but it is a problem. Second would be to look at the teaching methodology in a different manner. So the Arabs actually very much like Soviet, they don't like mistakes.
Yeah.
And this is not how we teach. So you remind them of how miserable they were at school and you tell them, don't do that. Yeah. And then we give them the positive reinforcement method. And finally, it's what to teach and when, that they don't invest in at all. We have it on a platform. They just follow the rules. They have a checklist. So it's very easy for them. So practically anyone who feel like, let's say, interested stays. Otherwise, they leave. So it's kind of a self-segregation process.
I love the impressions of our teachers, because when they come, they're like so skeptical, like, okay, let's see. I don't believe that it will work. And then they want to be a part of this. They want new streams of income. They want to try something new. They stick. And after they have first lesson with the real student, they are so excited, like, oh my God, my student is so smart. They remembered everything. They understood everything. I think this person is genius. And we are saying, like, all people are geniuses. You will see how it will work on all the people. And after first course, they are so excited because they can see the result of their own work, basically. And for me, it was so difficult at first to delegate, because I saw it in some manner, like, you should do this, this, and this. And I gave checklists for every step, like, just follow the steps. And then when they conduct lessons, we record everything, rewatch, and then we give the feedback on every lesson. And first I watched, and it was so difficult. Like, ah, oh, why did you say this and not that? And every single thing, I was like, oh my God, not like this. It should be like this. But then I saw the result. So basically, we give the path, and they add their, like, I don't
sparkles.
Know, sparkles, yeah. But the result is the same, or sometimes it's even better. So it was difficult to delegate, but then I saw that it's just beautiful, because for every person, there is a teacher. It's not me in particular, somebody else, because they have some features I don't have. But the method works the same. So it was, yeah.
It's all about method.
In this story, I was struck the most by the fact that although the talent and passion of the teacher are important, Lydia and Marwan do not rely on them. They rely on the methodology and IT solution. The requirements for candidates are minimal. You need to be fluent in Arabic, not scold students for mistakes, but reward for success. Be able to listen, communicate. In general, these are soft skills, but the main requirement is to follow the methodology. Everything is based on it. And a teacher's professional qualifications are not only unnecessary, but can even become an obstacle.
For us, we decided we don't want Arabic teachers that are teachers already and teaching, because it's so difficult to convince them that they can use different method, because they used already something, it works, yeah,
more or less,
yeah, and they will just be arguing with you, like, no, maybe it's better like this, not that.
Truth is, my experience, I mean, I might be wrong, but from my experience, having a degree in Arabic makes you a less qualified teacher to teach on Arabic. Yeah, it has two folds. First of all, you will have a lot of, let's just say, matured standard that we are challenging in Arabiyyati. Like, a teacher will come with a fixed way, and that fixed way is exactly what we're changing. Yeah, second, it's, let's just say, you like teachers have less fun when they are teaching, because what they do is they share very uninteresting thing from a point of authority. What I want is someone who's interested in the person in front of them. They build the relationship.
This gave me a lot to think about. I love academics myself, and one of my dreams is to teach at Stanford. For me, there is something about prestige or achievement in this, right? It's this sense of acknowledgement. But what I definitely understood during my time in Dubai is that what seems systemic, thorough, and advanced does not necessarily work well in practice, especially in a changing world. I talked about this with JP, marketing director from Fortis, who explained how they apply the same principle, which is keep it simple, stay practical, in their company.
I'm a big fan of triathlon. Triathlon is about swimming, biking, and running. It's something that I've practiced for a couple of years now. When I went to register myself, I saw this rack, this series of top-of-the-line, very expensive bikes, $10,000 a piece, racking up at the mechanic because they all had issues. And that's because these bikes were so advanced and so sophisticated that the smallest issue can often break the way that the bike works. And then it's difficult to fix. When I went for a race, I had a bike. My bike was an entry-level bike, a bicycle, quite cheap, but it's good enough. And it's well built. It's simple, but it's well built. And in a way, Fortis is just like that. It's well built, it's sturdy, right? For an industrial use, for people to use again and again and again without having any issue and without it feeling complex. If you take a much larger technology, that technology is going to be frustrating at times, is going to be overly complex at times, and it's going to be quite complicated. As a company, very often, they start small and then they add features and they add features and add features and end up being quite complex. And the reason why they add features is because they don't focus on their customer. They want to address all the customers with all kinds of needs. And this ends up being a very complicated operation, basically. The reason why you want to focus on just what is necessary is because you have your customers in mind. You want to keep things simple so that your small customer who isn't someone who is tech savvy, is able to grow their business without training or without feeling frustrated. I'm happy to build a simple platform that will serve the interests of a small business, but I'm also happy to sacrifice working with much larger enterprises who require a product that is a lot more complex. But if I were to address those big businesses, then I would disserve my small business owners.
So let's go back to Lydia's story. Following the same logic, keep it simple, stay practical, she created a technique based on understandable formulas and communicational situations. And it works. It works so well that teachers pick up the technique within 2 weeks.
No, it's super. It depends on the person, how fast they want to start. But usually it's around 2 weeks. And we don't spend a lot of time on practice or theory or right away go and teach a student. But we always record and we rewatch and we give feedback on the lessons, how it works.
But how do you control the teachers?
We record all the classes.
It's Marwan.
So we know exactly what happens in every class. Yeah. Now, we don't have penalties. We don't need to, because the things that you need to meet are very simple. Be on time, finish the material, and we can test any student at any point. Yeah, it's very easy to test the students. They either know or they don't know. So we watch what happened. We engage the teacher. We discuss the problem. We propose solutions. And until now, no one refused to implement. It's really easy because it's just a process of becoming a family member for us. Yeah, the teacher is a family member. So it's not about who's right and wrong. It's about what's better for the student and everybody else.
At first, I was so angry, like, oh my God,
yeah.
Because of the delegation issue. But of course, I don't give feedback right away because you need to calm down first.
Like, where then, is my phone?
Yeah. But then I give feedback, like, not like, oh, why did you do that? And that I give, it's better to do this next time. Look, you see, you didn't listen to your student, and now we finished on that. So please concentrate, listen to your student, and then move forward. Don't just focus on the material. So I give honest feedback, but in the way of positive reinforcement, not like punishment of the mistakes.
The last thing I wanted to learn about working with teachers was how to create such an environment so that there would be no turnover, so that they would stay in place and would not have to hire new teachers like every, I don't know, 3 months.
It's very difficult for them to leave for a couple of reasons. First is the flexibility. Yeah, we do not impose lessons on anyone. Yeah, we can always give it to the next teacher because everybody is following the standard. Second, the workload is minimum because the material is already done and the steps are already there. So the more you do it, the easier it gets. So it's not the opposite like other places of work. And another reason is maybe people are interested in talking to other people. Maybe they're interested in teaching other people. But it's a very big challenge to find clients. And we are the one who's finding clients for the teachers. So practically, we own the cycle. Yeah, so the teacher really, I mean, they don't want to go and sell. However, if they do sell, they get a percentage as well. So the idea is we try to support them in every way. If you want to stay and sell, great. If you want to stay and teach, great. If you want to do both, great. If you want to only sell, great. However you want to work with us, we're open. But generally, no one stays and sell because selling is hard. Yeah, everybody like have this stigma about sales. So yeah, they stay and teach, meet people, have fun, get paid for it.
It's just the matter of building loyalty with them, because when we started, we gave each teacher one student, and because of all the political storms, we didn't have more students. So we created weekly meetings with teachers, and we were meeting with them, discussing stuff, discussing personal issues, just to build the relationship, and asking them to wait, because now we don't have. If you want, you can wait with us, or mm-hmm. What can we do? You can leave anytime. And they kept waiting with us, and then we recruited more and more and more students, and now they have full-time job.
First, it was part-time. Yeah, first, is there a salary depending on the class?
We have only salary conducted, like how many lessons you conducted, you receive this money, and you can do whatever you want outside of this. But they have 4 or 5 lessons per day, so they don't need to do anything else.
Soon, the crisis passed, and she and her team found the creative methods on how to sell.
So for now, our method was built on 2 things. So our previous students, because we have hundreds of previous students and their recommendations, yeah? So this is what drove the sales in the last 3 years. Lately, we started doing events. So we're visiting and spreading the words and awareness about the brand. And this created a lot of traction. So practically, these are the 2 funnels that we're building right now. We built and you're reusing, yeah? We're building the events one. But one of them is previous relationships and the other one is events. So it's we went to Jitex, the North Star, in October. And the idea is we are part of In5. In5 is an incubator. And they provided a really good booth and a good price and everything and a good support system in general. But generally in events, everybody goes there with an open mind. So it's kind of easy to find people who can you click with and start building towards a partnership. So mainly it's through the events. The idea is when you meet people and you discuss the idea, it's very hard not to try, especially if you're interested. Yeah, so it's very easy to show the value because people can actually start interacting with the program in the first 5 minutes. You don't even need an hour. Yeah? After an hour, you already learned something that you can actually use in life. So it's, the event is about also changing the idea because, for example, you tried Arabic before. Yeah, you already have a very clear idea that this language is hard and it's you. The problem is you. Yeah. The event gives me the platform to tell the student that it's actually not you, it's the one who taught you. And this ignites the empowering process. Because people who want to investigate that further come and try. And when they try, they realize that, of course, it's not me. It's the one who taught me.
This part of the interview inspired me a lot. First, it's about the power of collaboration. Don't chase after each individual student on the internet with paid advertising, but negotiate with incubator once and immediately get a bunch of clients. So cool. I'm writing this down for myself. I also really liked how accurately they captured exactly who their target audience was. Arabiti is a school for the second attempt of learning Arabic. Some of their students already tried to learn before, but it didn't work out. And look no further. It's my story too, and I'm definitely the target audience.
Oh, God, I tried. I had some attempts to learn Arabic, to be honest. It was not successful at all because I guess they would just give, you know, random words to memorize. And yeah. You're just like, how is it possible? And also, let's not forget that the writing and symbols and everything is quite different to all the usual ones that you're accustomed to. So that made my even less like not a long experience, but it made me feel miserable.
We love students that have tried learning Arabic and
yes.
failed. You can evaluate how fast you will learn Arabic with Arabiti and how easy it is, because everyone think that Arabic is difficult, especially reading and writing, but this is the simplest part. You will learn reading and writing within 3 hours, and the rest you will speak and learn more grammar. And we have very high retention rate. Basically 8 out of 10 of our students stay with us more than 1 and 2 courses. They just want to continue.
Get till the end, right?
The idea here that we received a referral for someone who's interested in learning Arabic, and they already tried to learn Arabic, so they already had a little experience and had an idea, and they are really passionate about the language themselves, yeah? From like, not from us. They had the passion. And when they saw how we're approaching the whole problem, they were quite, let's just say, impressed, yeah, because they already had the experience.
And finally, I asked Lydia and Marwan how they plan to scale.
We want to Arabiti to be a one-stop shop for every Arabic learner, teacher, and content creator. We want it to be a platform for students. If I want to learn Arabic, I don't know where to start. Yeah, where to find the teacher, which material, which dialect I want to do. So on Arabiti, they will have all the answers and the tools to learn Arabic. For teachers, if I'm an Arab person, I don't know what to do. Maybe I want to be a teacher, maybe not. Maybe I want to have an extra stream of income. They can come on Arabiti and become a teacher. If I am a content creator, I want to publish articles about Arabic in Arabic or about anything else, they can do it on Arabiti as well. And then we will assign this material by levels. So any student can find the right material.
Yeah. Like extra activities.
Yes. So this is in future plans. And we want to grow in teaching Arabic for teachers. We want to be, for now, we've done it for free and we recruited them. Now we want to create a course for teachers as a part of extra, curriculum for teachers, so they will it will be paid from their side. And also we want to create pre-recorded courses. So if you don't have time, you don't have money, for example, for one-to-one lessons or group lessons, you can still learn Arabic with pre-recorded courses.
How would you say, what is your product market fit if you could describe it in a couple of words or maybe one sentence?
For us, I would say our confidence stems from the fact that we've been doing this for, Lydia has been doing this for more than a decade. Me, I was like I saw this and I was supporting her for a long time. And she did the journey herself. So it's kind of a personal experience. That's how we know there is a product market fit. But in terms of the way you do the research, the numbers, that helped a lot. Because, for example, when you see that the whole world now is eyeing the Middle East, and the Middle East and the Gulf region is also preparing itself to receive sometimes 2x the population of a region in 10 years, you know that this is something that is very important. Yeah. Plus the fact that all the governments in the region, starting from the UAE, Saudi, and the big players, they are focusing on the identity of the region. So they want, for example, every document that you present in Saudi has to be in Arabic. Yeah. Same logic started happening in the UAE, starting from 1997, where you cannot have any legal document that is presented in any language other than Arabic. Yeah, so there is a very clear direction to nationalize all the interactions, and let's just say at least the formal interactions, and also protect the culture. Because, like, for example, if you go to UAE now, you can get away with not speaking Arabic at all. But Saudi is making sure not to have the same issue. So you cannot go away with not speaking Arabic. You will not be able to buy food. You will not be able to travel in taxis, be served in hotels, etc. I think, you are going for English language. You have a lot more work to do than we have to, yeah? You have a lot of schools. I personally cannot recommend a good or bad school because I don't know, yeah?
Yet.
But, yeah, hopefully there will be a new, good, very good school.
Yeah. Yes, for sure.
Yes, but for me, I don't know, I don't understand English. To me, it's one of the most difficult languages to learn. And yeah, if there is a system to fix that, it would be great. Because it took me decades to learn English.
This is what I'm fighting, you know, like you guys fight with English language, with Arabic language, I fight with English language and the stereotypes and all that stuff when it comes to English, because everybody has some trauma, you know, behind.
Yeah, I'm one of the traumatized people.
Everybody's a traumatized person, and that makes me so upset and sad. I'm like, no, that's English. It's very, very beautiful structure. So that's my aim, you know, to show that as well.
Perfect. Yeah, I would love to see that personally. Yeah, because I always think there is room for improvement.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah.
Love it. Again, thank you so much. I was very, very happy to see you.
Now, I basically know what to do. I need to turn my ability to teach into methodology, then formulate the main value of it. My competitors say things like, we'll teach you to speak in an hour, but what'd be my offer? Then I need to look for accelerators or other companies who can provide me with an audience. Onboard at least one teacher, give them a student for a lesson, and see what comes of it. Sounds pretty simple, right? You're listening to Crossing the Desert, podcast by Fortis. Fortis helps seamlessly connect businesses and their customers and run the business. It assists in attracting and retaining customers, selling products and services, accepting payments both online and in-store, and managing finances and personnel. Join Fortis social media. Links are in the episode description. Listen to Crossing the Desert on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, CastBox, Spotify, and whenever you listen to podcasts. Add us to your favorites and leave your feedback. We'd love to hear from you. Give us 5 stars or a heart and leave us a comment. This will help other listeners find out about us, and we'll be pleased. Production by Hatch Up Podcast Studio. Showrunners Alexandra Volkova and Yelena Volkova. Producer Daria Sanikova. Scriptwriter and editor Alexandra Volkova. History consultant Alena Podnebenna. Sound designer Mikhail Vasilyev. And I'm your host, Isaac Delonian.